Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the No Normal Show for Thursday, January 21, 2021. Brought to you by Revive Health. This is our weekly deep dive into how hospital and health system marketers and communicators can navigate what we call the No Normal. I'm Chris Bevelo, Health Systems Practice Lead at Revive Health and your host for the show. Joined as always by Chase Kleckner, who is Senior Marketing Manager at Revive Health and our show's producer. Hello, Chase.
Hey, Chris. Excited to dive into today's conversation.
Absolutely. I'm excited too, because we have two guests with us. First, back on the show is Ryan Coliani. If you've missed Ryan before, he's Group Lead for Communications and Issues and Crisis within Revive Health. He has more than a decade of agency experience, responsible for ensuring that our clients are prepared for the unexpected and help protect their reputations. As a poised crisis counselor and talented media trainer, Ryan has built impactful public affairs campaigns and has elevated the profile of university presidents and Fortune 100 executives. Ryan, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Yeah, looking forward to diving in. Also with us, we are pleased to welcome Christian Barnett. Christian is the SVP of Strategy at Revive Health. He has worked with some of the biggest brands in the world, such as Lego, Dell, LG, Burt's Bees, Green Mountain Coffee Roasters, Bacardi, Ford, Lincoln, Chevron, and Cartoon Network. Christian's career includes research, advertising, and branding in London, New York, and Nashville. Christian, welcome.
Hey, Chris. Good to be back. I hope you can hear me okay.
We can hear you just fine, just fine.
Great.
Super excited to dive in with you two. A couple of housekeeping notes before we do, because we're going to talk about vaccines, and also vaccines. So much to cover. If you're new to the show, this is a podcast where we share industry trends, research, stories, both from inside and outside the industry, any kind of ideas or content that will help you all navigate what we call the no normal. If you want to know more about how we think about the no normal, how we define it, some principles for navigating it, check out the blog post, which Chase will post in the chat function of your Zoom profile, your Zoom platform, your Zoom tool, your Zoom application, whatever you want to refer to Zoom as. But let's dive in. So vaccines in the headlines, even today, obviously with a transition yesterday to a new administration, there's headlines today. It is the first priority of the Biden administration. Today they're spending completely on COVID-19, according to what they're telling us. There's a lot of stuff out there about kind of what they've been left with in terms of vaccine planning. Depending on your resources, doesn't sound like much. Depending on where you go, there's an article in CNN where sources say pretty much it's non-existent in terms of distribution plan. You see that a little bit in the New York Times. Obviously, some folks may say those are slanted sources. I consider those to be actually journalistic sources, but you can find other resources talking to that. So big priority, obviously, right now for the Biden administration, big priority for all of us as humans, and a top priority for hospitals and health systems. And, you know, what we want to cover in this show really is how hospitals and health systems need to make sure they're on the right side of this. Because obviously, vaccine distribution in this country has not gone according to, according to plan, but that assumes there is a plan. If there was a plan, has it gone according to it? And if there wasn't a plan, that explains a lot. It's just not going well, or what we hoped. It's not like it's the end of the world, but we all hope this would be going better. And hospitals and health systems haven't necessarily been handed a great situation to deal with. That said, we're also not helping ourselves as an industry. And so what we want to do is kind of quickly talk through some of the things, that we're seeing from hospitals and health systems. Talk about ways that we need to be thinking about those differently in terms of communications. And then also hear from Christian, who's got a really cool, I think, insight in how to think about all this. So Ryan, is there anything you want to add before we kind of get into the unfortunately, we should call it a laundry list of some missteps. Anything you want to add about the situation with vaccines, just to set the stage better?
Yeah, I think the key point that you made, Chris, is just the fact that, the can that they were dealt hasn't been the strongest from a health system perspective, but there are things that we're kind of getting in our way. And ultimately we've seen, a tremendous amount of goodwill built up for health systems over the last 9 or 10 months. and how we navigate this vaccine distribution from a health system perspective ultimately is going to determine whether that kind of trust boost continues longer term.
Yeah, it's such a critical situation. And we've been saying this all along. Hospitals and health systems are seen as the number one resource for health information by consumers. The most trusted, they want to hear more from us. This has been true since the outset. It's why we were pushing early on for folks to be more aggressive in talking about things like mask wearing, about washing your hands, about filling really a leadership void that existed back in the spring of 2020. And this continues all the way through with vaccines, especially given our role as hospitals and health systems in distributing vaccines. We're not in the best situation. That said, Ryan, why don't you kind of tick off some of the things that we've been monitoring, we're not here to pick on anybody. This is not meant to call out any one individual organization. It's more to just say, here are some of the things that we're seeing that aren't helping our cause in terms of hospitals and health systems stay on the right side of perception around all of this, whether it's vaccine specifically or COVID-19. So give us some examples, Ryan. Let's go down the checklist here.
Yeah, I mean, there's been obviously a lot of blame to go around on why we haven't ultimately met the expectations that we anticipated from a vaccine distribution perspective. You know, the initial numbers given by the previous administration were 20 million by the end of December. That hasn't happened. And in addition to some of that pushback on federal officials, we're starting to see some pushback from governors on hospital systems for them to go faster on the distribution piece. Some of you all may have seen Governor Cuomo in New York essentially threaten fines for hospitals if they don't distribute fast enough. So a very challenging environment there for health systems to navigate, particularly since they don't know almost on a week-by-week basis how many new vaccines they're going to be receiving. But, you know, the pace obviously is key. Another big area that we've talked a lot about is some systems that have essentially used their entire allotment of vaccines to vaccinate their own workforce before going to the general public, and that includes folks that aren't frontline care workers. That's a pretty significant reputational risk for health systems that engage in that practice, given that it doesn't follow CDC guidelines, distribution guidelines, on those fronts. And then you've seen systems that have you know, tried to take the right approach or try to take a measured approach and an analytical approach on how they distribute vaccines. And that unfortunately has led to a number of systems receiving criticisms from frontline care workers who feel that they should have been allocated a vaccine but haven't received it. And you know, whether the algorithms were correct and those types of things. So I think those are some of the big ones. We're also seeing, you know, some systems or some specific care workers refusing to vaccinate in some communities, or you've seen terrible stories of nurses or others that have destroyed vaccine supplies. And so while that's not necessarily a health system risk, when an employee does it, you know, there's certainly I think some forgiveness in the public. It does kind of result in some criticism as far as what trainings are being put in place or stop gaps to ensure that these types of things don't happen. So just a couple there. You know, Chris, I know there's some others that we might want to talk about, but just broader kind of challenges on the ultimate distribution are kind of having slow kind of paper cuts over and over again that are kind of slowly potentially dragging down the overall industry. And you know, we still have many, 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 many more months to go before this is resolved. And you know, how we ultimately navigate these next 9 to 12 months are going to be critical from a health system reputation perspective.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, because it's not like all hospitals are doing all the things we just mentioned. In fact, in some cases, it's one, or it's a very, you know, it's an outlier. So the example of a story about nurses refusing to give vaccines because they don't believe in the vaccine itself. That's an outlying story, but like you said, it's death by a thousand cuts. And some of these are more systemic. I think the example, you know, the New York Times running with a story about some of our largest, more prestigious AMCs providing the vaccine to their entire workforce instead of following the guidelines. All of this adds up, and it adds up to a perception. If we were all getting credit collectively for the way we were showing up during this crisis, whether you individually as an organization or not, we're rising to the occasion the same way. We will all also suffer collectively from this kind of collection of problems. And there's some that are emerging. I mean, a lot of this, again, is coming from a lack of a plan. I mean, there is a plan, there's prioritization, but everybody's approaching it differently. States are approaching it differently. Systems are approaching it differently. One of the things we're keeping an eye on is we're seeing, I would say, more and more, though not all systems, requiring, for example, registration or participation in their EMR, so like MyChart, or requiring a PCP visit to receive the vaccine. Now, as far as we understand, Ryan, correct me if I'm wrong, there's nothing in the national guidelines that says you can't get the vaccine unless you have a doctor's visit. And so we're trying to get to the bottom of why this is happening. It could be a liability issue. It could be, well, we think that's smart clinically. It could be, you know, we've invented the term marketing coercion. Hopefully it's not that. Like, hey, here's an opportunity to force people into our PCP panel. Hopefully it's not that, but it almost doesn't matter, because from the outside, it feels like systems putting hurdles in place for people to get the vaccine. You want to add to that?
Right, right. No, you're spot on, because ultimately what health systems need to be doing is making it as easy as possible for people that are eligible to get a vaccine to receive it. And this ultimately leads to some inequities that we've seen across the entire pandemic, whether that's communities of color that have been impacted at a significantly higher rate, and now it's translating into vaccine rates. African-Americans are significantly lower, seeing significantly lower rates of vaccination at this point compared to other demographics, and so it's kind of trickling down that way. So again, we have to be absolutely, we have to be transparent, we have to be open, we have to ensure that, you know, while it may make sense to promote contact our patients that we have existing relationships with, we have to also create other avenues that for those that are not part of our health system to easily sign up or understand more about how they get vaccinated.
Yeah, and we could talk probably the whole hour about, you know, at Revive, all we do is healthcare. And so we have conversations, we have Slack channel conversations that are like 50 posts on this stuff. And it's interesting just to even hear people's personal anecdotes. It's all over the map of how what people are experiencing or their family members are experiencing. You know, we first kind of learned about the idea of PCP, a PCP requirement, a visit requirement with that system was through a personal anecdote, right? And then we start seeing it in the news. My personal example is, this is where health systems need to make sure they're out front in the right way leading. You know, when a lot of these conversations were happening, I went to my own health system, which again, I'm not going to call out, just to see like, well, shoot, I'm immunocompromised. Maybe there's a way for me to get this sooner than I think. So first of all, it took me 3 clicks to get the vaccine information, which is insane. Like, what else are people looking at right now other than that? How can that not be like super obvious on a homepage? But when I found it, you know, it was a classic kind of FAQ. And the first question was, when can I get my vaccine? Which is, yeah, that's why I'm there. Their answer was, we're not sure when you can get your vaccine because there's a lot of different variables. That was it. There was no like context or anything. And then the next one was, you know, do you have a waiting list for a vaccine? No, we don't have a waiting list. And those are both honest answers. Like I mean to say it that way, but boy, there's so much more you could have done there. There's so much more you could have helped me with. Like, here I am raising my hand. Give me some context. Give me some more content. Give me something rather than, you know, pretty much it was this. Like, if you could watch me, I'm shrugging it. Not the best way to show up, right? So we got all this stuff, Ryan. Christian, I know that we're going to bring you in, so feel free to jump in along the way here. We don't mean to nobody puts Christian in a corner.
It's pretty interesting to listen to, yeah.
We're going to pull you in because I think you have such an interesting insight to share with folks. But Ryan, before we get to that, talk about some things that we've been saying and continue to say that are important for health systems to really try to navigate this.
Yeah, I think your example is a really good one on what needs to be done from a health system perspective. And, you know, it goes back to that point of transparency. We know that the vaccination rates and the number of vaccines that health systems are receiving is a very moving target. I think it's okay for health systems to admit that. They just need to be forthcoming with ultimately what we're doing. So one, how we're prioritizing, how we're scheduling, where we're scheduling. We need to provide regular updates, whether that's on our website or through media, on the pace and the progress that we're making. So maybe even showing how many vaccines the system's received compared to the number of, the number of vaccines that a system has given compared to the number of vaccines that received. You know, how far out are people going to have to wait to get their appointment? Kind of some of those modules, because you see all these stories of health systems, we got 4,000 calls today for X number of slots. So let's be transparent about that. I think one thing is make sure that you're communicating how you're planning on equitably distributing the vaccine and how quickly you're doing it and how you're doing it beyond your staff population. Go ahead.
I want to stop there, Ryan. There's a question related. You can finish your thought, but let's not go to the next one before we can expand on this one a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just ultimately you're seeing health systems, starting to expand where they're providing vaccines. It's not just happening within their walls anymore. Health systems that are working to partner with larger, arenas in their market or faith-based organizations or community centers and those types of things. We need to get out in the community to distribute, particularly as more vaccines come online and the population that's eligible expands.
Yeah, so I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I think there's a question actually that I think is related to this. And it again kind of goes back to, hey, we're trying to help hospitals and health systems here. But we also recognize that you got one arm tied behind your back because of what you're having to deal with, both from government, state and federal, and the media and others. A question is, would love to hear your thoughts about reports such as Florida giving the vaccine to all comers. And this isn't just reports. Right. So one of the things the Biden administration has said is like one of the things we want to change is make this far more accessible to far more people. Right. In Minnesota, there was a story last week about how the Minnesota government, the state government said, hey, health systems, you should give your excess vaccines to more people, like go ahead and open the doors to the elderly. Right. There's a clear prioritization that is set out by, I think, the CDC. Different groups and that type of thing. And yet you have the federal government now, you have a state government. There was an opinion piece in either the Washington Post and New York Times today. The headline was, if you have the ability to get the vaccine before others who are supposed to get it, take it. I didn't read the story, but I'm like, it's this balance between there's a very clear order of how we're going to do this and Katie, bar the door, like open it up, like whoever, like first come, first serve, let's do this. That's not hospitals and health systems driving that. That's a lot of things. How are we supposed to deal with that, Ryan?
Yeah, and it goes back to what we talked about at the beginning, where you have, every different state doing either different prioritization groups, opening up to different number of people, and it leaves health systems kind of essentially have to kind of be the cop on kind of determining, are we actually going to make sure that everybody is over the age of 75 that's getting the vaccine? Are we IDing people? What responsibilities do health systems have? And then to the questioner's point, we have situations in Florida where, hundreds of people are camping out every night expecting to get the vaccine the next morning. And, that ultimately is a risk there. There has to be a better way. So I think health systems need to continue to be kind of the voice of reason. And so again, it goes back to kind of how they manage those expectations. So if we're going to have 1,000 vaccines that we're planning on distributing today, and we're doing a first come first serve, and that seems to be not necessarily a health system plan in Florida, that seems to be more of a public health plan as far as where things are, then we need to make that known and how that process is going to be. Or we need to start to create a little bit more of an orderly piece. Because I think there's valid points that to be made about opening it up to as many people as possible if the vaccines are going unused. But I think ultimately it's become a distribution challenge to ensure that they're reaching those target markets and those target demographics to receive it. When there are available vaccines, we've seen public health systems and public health officials create waiting lists. Like, let's do those types of things to make sure that they don't go unused. But right now, since the demand is so high, I still think there's an obligation for health systems to try to at least put people in the buckets that the CDC is recommending with those high risk groups.
And maybe we should talk a little bit about something we touched on, but you need to think through a little bit. So along with the idea, I mentioned the PCP requirements. As far as we understand, that's not a CDC thing. That's not a It's not a clinical thing. That is something systems are choosing to do for whatever reason. The other thing that we're seeing is the requirement, and sometimes the single requirement, like the only way to access this is through an EMR. So in other words, you have to be registered on a MyChart account for that system to receive the vaccine from that system. In some ways, Ryan, I think when you look at it from a systems perspective, it makes some sense, right? Like, hey, this is a population we know. We have their information. We know how to prioritize them clinically. And so we're gonna address them in an appropriate way. But again, it brings some challenges when you look at this from the outside, right?
Right, exactly. It's just, there has to be a broader strategy to come to help give additional guidance. And then when health systems aren't able, or when that guidance is not clear, health systems need to step up and have a point of view on it.
Yeah, it's just, I think it's fine to use your EMR to manage your patient population. But if you are charged with distributing vaccines in your community, it also needs to be accessible to people that aren't your patients, and certainly patients that aren't registered on your EMR, right? That, again, it's kind of like, why are we putting these hurdles in front of people? I'm sure there are, from inside an organization, and I would love to hear from anybody who's in the audience who works at a hospital health system, who can say, well, check yourself, you guys. This is why we got to use EMR, right? It's compliance or it's liability. And all those may be fair. And again, like I said, we're trying to get to the bottom of why this is happening, but all we know is that from the outside, it just feels like it's just hurdles. It's making it more difficult for folks.
Yeah, and one quick thing just to add on that, especially as vaccine distribution grows a little bit wider, and it's not necessarily health systems kind of leading the charge on distributing, whether that's CVS, Walmart, Walgreens, all these other broader markets that are before COVID were trying to enter, the provider space. That's going to present some risk because we're going, these larger organizations that do flu shots every year, may have an easier way to navigate and to get people inside. People, the general consumer is going to remember that next time they, may need to get, a flu vaccine or, go to an urgent care clinic or something like that. Was it harder for me to go through the health system process or was it easier for me to go through a retail clinic? That ultimately has longer term impacts for the business of healthcare for health systems.
Yeah. And again, appreciate the audience, the feedback from our friend Catherine, longtime listener, first time poster, maybe. I don't know. I think Catherine, you've posted before. I won't call you out. But helpful information in the chat about, hey, one of the reasons we're leveraging the EMR is because there's an obligation to report and track who's getting the vaccine. And that's a perfect tool to do that. But what about the people that aren't in your EMR population? And that just adds a burden for health systems, clearly, to figure out, well, how are we going to track them? And I'm sure that's something that all systems are grappling with. But it's a great example of why we're seeing EMRs being introduced as part of this process. Christian,
I've
held you silent too long, sir. I want to bring you in because you mentioned something the other day in a conversation. Again, we have so many conversations within the agency about this from all different angles. And we work with most of our clients around this issue in one way or the other, whether that's just providing counsel, whether that's helping with communications, whether that's actually going to market with communications or advertising, whatever, to help clarify this. And you shared something that you said that, you and the team have really kind of learned in terms of a key insight, we think. And we're still working through it, so this isn't like polished science, maybe is a fair way to put it. But I felt like it was so powerful that we should share it with this group and even get some feedback from people. But why don't you kind of help set up and explain the way that we're seeing this through a different kind of lens?
Okay, it's good that you used the word insight. And sometimes, one definition of insight is an undiscovered cliche, which is all too obvious once you've kind of seen it. And I think this is one of those. Once you've seen it, you go, of course, that's blindingly obvious, but it takes a little bit to see it. Anyway, let me go back a step or two. We've been working a fair amount with our clients recently to communicate vaccines. And we've been looking at lots of research and conducting lots of research. Very crudely, there are three kind of types of response to the vaccine, which is, yes, I'm definitely going to get it as soon as I can. No, I'm not going to get it whatsoever, and something in the middle. Now, for communicators, as Chris has been, you know, perfectly illustrating earlier, those who are willing to get it immediately, the communications challenge is when, how, where, and just make that information provision as crisp and as navigable as possible. That's not deep psychology. It's like great signage and wayfinding and so forth. The other end of the spectrum, those who are just not going to have the vaccine, right, and refuse to go anywhere near that, right now, they're probably not the people to try and communicate with or to try and persuade. It's that great clump in the middle. And there is a great clump. I mean, the research varies. Some people talk about it as a third. If you call it a third, it's a significant number. So when we start saying, well, why do these people not want to get the vaccine or want to delay the vaccine or skeptical about it? And how do we communicate to them? Now, when you look at research, the research starts to say things like, I don't want to be a guinea pig. I'm worried about the efficacy. I'm worried about the safety. I'm worried about the speed to market. And for me as a researcher, I'm thinking, I don't know why, but I don't feel entirely comfortable with that as a perspective. Why do I say that? Because the answer to those sorts of reasons are be transparent, double down on trust, be really explicit about what we do know, what we don't know, and create credibility and trustworthiness so people come to us. And I'm like, I think there's more than that. I just think there's more than that. And I started looking at how the vaccine was being communicated. And I think everybody's kind of general impression is probably going to be, excuse me, white, male, wealthy, powerful, predominantly, not exclusively, but predominantly. And then you start thinking about whose vaccine is it? And I think some of the things that you were talking about earlier about the hospitals prioritizing their own staff exclusively and not following guidelines speaks into that, whose vaccine is it? And Big Pharma speaks into whose vaccine is it? And quickly we go beyond the notion of trust and transparency and into a question of identity. And identity is deep and powerful and meaningful. And that's where there is undeniably a role for trustworthy, credible information. But beyond that, there's an identity issue. And so we started doing some work and we did some research and we started asking questions like, is the vaccine for you? Is it your vaccine? And of course, when you dig into it, certain populations, particularly the black population, not as much as other ethnicities or the white population, it's not for me. It's not for my community. And now we're beyond trust, we're into identity. And we also did some picture exercises with portraits and images and who's going to get the vaccine first. And when you look at the different ethnographic breakdowns, it's very clear, again, it's not just the black population, but that's where it's most extreme. There is a different prioritization, which is white, older, middle class. And the younger black images get pushed to the bottom, which is not the same as when you look at it by other. It's not just a race issue. There's clearly a rural and an income and an educational issue as well. But that's where it shows up most keenly. So then you start thinking, how do we think about this? I mean, the very shortcut answer is it's got to be my vaccine as much as their vaccine. And I think that has huge implications for who we show, how we talk. I mean, another example, you go on an airline, well, we used to go on airlines, and you get the safety card, it's all pictures. You get some furniture from IKEA, it's all pictures, the assembly. You go to a vaccine website and it's all dense words which look really medical and I don't want to read. You know, I just don't think we're doing enough to stand in other people's shoes and make it their vaccine. And a lot of the stories I've heard with Chris and Ryan, it's perpetuating the them and us situation. Sorry, I've kind of just gone for it and ran it.
That's great. That's it. And I think, like, first of all, the chat's blowing up and I love this. And I just want to make sure that we are crystal clear. We're here. We're part of this. We are with you guys. We're here to help. We may be talking about some critical things and that there's a lot of commentary in the chat about undeniable frustration for folks on this call and folks in your position, marketers and communicators, because we understand, and you guys live it every day, you don't get to control the vaccine, you know, distribution strategy. You don't get to control what the supply is. You have limited power in many ways. But what we're trying to point out is all of that still may be true. And it's like some of the classic things we always talk about, the patient experience and that type of thing. All of that may be true, but it's really important to understand the impact on your brand and your image, whether you can manage it or not, of how some of this stuff shows up. So as we kind of click through what Ryan and I click through of the things that we see people kind of stepping in, that's hopefully that people can go, ah, we got to watch out for that. We got to be careful of this. And I think what Christian is talking about, if I had to boil it down, is the us versus them. Hospitals and health systems, rightly so, have been embraced throughout this pandemic as heroes, as, you know, entities that are really on the right side of things. And especially early on, when there was a lack of PPE, a lack of masks, that benefited us because we were forgiven for that. And in many cases, again, it's not our fault there was a lack of PPE, but people didn't blame us for that kind of thing. If we end up on the wrong side of the us versus them division, we are going to be lumped in with the federal government. We're going to be lumped in with pharma, and we're going to lose everything that we've gained in some cases, or in many cases. And that's the danger here. Christian, you brought up something, you may have mentioned it, I missed it, but I think it shows how this can happen even inadvertently. So early on, when the vaccine first hit, there was an effort by many institutions to try to demonstrate that it was safe. And they did that by having senior people, or the CEO, for example, get the shot first. Now, that makes sense if you're concerned about people worrying about whether this is safe. But we all know what the profile of the CEO is in this space. As Christian said, it's generally old white men. Not always, not exclusively. And that certainly was not all the people that got the shot. But if you're constantly seeing 65-year-old white men getting the shot first, it goes back to what Christian's saying. All of a sudden, it's like, well, okay, well, of course they're going to get it first. Why wouldn't they? And I think that actually stopped, slowed, because they started to get pushback on it. I don't know if you want to talk more about that, Christian. That's not anybody's fault. That was a good intention with an unexpected side effect.
Yeah, this is a slightly different angle into the same conversation. I did a project a long time ago for Coca-Cola, and the essence of the project was it was about perceptions of health or not health. If you put a Coke next to a burger and some fries, it's different from if you put it next to a salad, just really simply. How we process visuals and what we do with meaning creates so much of how we look at the world. And to your point, Chris, when you see pictures of 65-year-old white hospital CEOs, even if it's unintentional, even if there was some thought around it, it still communicates something. And I just think we have to be mindful of what it communicates, and particularly given the kind of cultural and societal backdrop in the last 18 months, how we might want to redress that balance, or at least emphasize something which helps balance things out a bit more. I mean, I was talking to one of our colleagues, particularly about the black population, and he said, I've got a hunch. Now, this is a hunch, it's not researched or anything. He said, grandmothers. Now, grandmothers may be, because of their age, nearer the top of the line to get the vaccine. Why don't we arm them with materials? Why wouldn't they go back and speak to their families and their friends and their neighbors and their communities, because they have such a powerful voice in there? And that seems a really, really thoughtful way of thinking about the solution, as much as what we have been seeing so far. I mean, that's just an example, I think. I think it's a very compelling example as well.
Yeah, that's great. I just want to pause for a second. Remember, if you got a question for us, the way that we answer them is you put them in the Q&A function in Zoom. So make sure, sometimes we can see people raising their hands and things, but we can't bring them on to ask questions. So just make sure if you've got one, throw it in there. There's a number of them. I'm going to hit a few here, guys. The first one, actually, I think I'd throw out to the audience. And so please provide whatever answer you can in the chat, and we'll try to reflect that back. But the question is, we'd love to hear how people are prioritizing with certain tiers. How do you communicate to 10,000 people that they can sign up if you only have 1,000 doses? It's such a great question. And it's not even communicate, right? How do you even, what is it, you know, is it first come, first serve, as the questioner asked? And how do you communicate that? I think that's a fair way to communicate if that's the case. Hey, we are now making the vaccine available to X group, all right? So let's say people over 65. But we have a limited supply. We get more occasionally. We're not always sure we get them. So there's a limited supply. So we've created a waiting list. It is first come, first serve. So please sign up here. And as you know, once we hit our cap, we'll stop distributing. And then we'll pick it back up with whoever's at the top of the list. You know, there are ways to do it. But again, I think it speaks to, you have to work with operations. You have to work with however you're distributing it to figure out the actual answer to that, right? But would love for other people to post in the channel, in chat, their answers to that. Quick question, Christian. Mm-hmm. The research that you're talking about, is it available to folks right now?
Not right now. It only came in, honestly, yesterday. We have to we have to put it into some sort of shape and form. But that will happen in the next few days, and it will be available, I imagine, next week. So
we will package that up. So another question, and I think Ryan and Christian, you can both jump in on this one if you have thoughts. Are there any parallels that can be drawn between people seeking the vaccine and voter registration? For example, are there any examples you're aware of hospitals successfully collecting information in non-EMR ways, like a text campaign, for example?
I'm going to add something very quickly, and it's an extreme example, but I think it proves a really good point. We were doing some work in California about 18 months ago, and there was a big concern about the undocumented, I think is the correct phrase. And the undocumented don't even want to go to food banks because that's a place where officials know that they can find the undocumented. So, you know, there's a lot of agricultural workers. And of course, now in COVID times, the agricultural workers live together, group together, travel together, work together. So it's a very dense and concentrated population. The way to reach those people was text, because there was no, these people did not want to officially register or sign any forms or do anything which might be construed as official. So text was brilliant. Now I'm taking that extreme example and work back from there. And I think things like text and good old fashioned, you know, knock on doors and find the right areas and find the right people. In some ways, it can go where digital and virtual can't go, or people won't let it go. So totally, totally agree.
Ryan, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think we have seen some other health systems kind of do, or essentially they'll create new profiles when a patient doesn't have a MyChart account or something along those lines, and they'll put them through the guest system, or they'll, if they're taking it over the phone, they'll create a record for them so that they're in their system. It's not necessarily the patient to have to do that. So that's another way to do it. And then to Christian's point, I think there's a lot of ways to use text, whether that's for reminders of the second dose that's coming, or going back to what we were talking about earlier, kind of adding context and managing expectations. You know, when a new priority group is eligible, do we go and notify folks, whether it's via email or through text, that we have contact information for that we know fit in these specific categories? That, you know, you can sign up starting Monday at 10 a.m. here. We have, you know, we anticipate that slots will go quickly, but we'll add you to the wait list. You know, we need to make it as easy as possible for patients to get in and out of the system and do it in a way where they're communicating already. So I think it's a great idea. It's something that systems should be doing more of on the text front.
All right. Terrific. I want to try to wrap things up here. Christian, you go first, and then Ryan, any final thoughts for folks as they think about vaccines?
One final thought, and it's a little bit provocative, but it's not crazy. You know, when we were talking about showing the leadership of health systems, I mean, why wouldn't you show the leadership, a percentage of the leadership being vaccinated, but also show a percentage of the next level and the next level and the next level and the next level? So you can show that not only leadership, but everybody, and equally everybody, is part of the solution. And then that's just a thought, perhaps a bit provocative, not crazy. And I just leave it at there, I think.
Yeah, I think that that's a really good point, Christian. I think ultimately this is an evolution. This is going to evolve on a day-to-day, week-by-week, month-by-month perspective. And just as we, as health systems have done unbelievably over the last 10 months of being flexible, that's only going to continue. I think there's an opportunity here for health systems to lead and continue to lead as they've done over the last year or so. When you see something that's working, publicize it. Partner with other health systems in your region to share those successes so that they can implement it themselves and ultimately help this vaccine get distributed faster.
Yeah, and I'm just going to add to that as the final thought here. Somebody posted in the chat, you know, there's just no playbook for this, and that is true. And it's unfortunate. It's very similar to where we were in the spring where folks were trying to figure out testing as an example. It was all over the place, or how to acquire PPE, all over the place. And certainly next go around, I think we'll all be better prepared. But it's also fair to say they're just, the planning for all this was just bereft. I mean, just, you know, the idea that as a country, we're just going to throw this to the states. We're not going to have any federal guidance, any federal plan. I think politics aside, it's not a political message. There should be more attention going forward, more guidance, more structure. That should help. Folks are learning. This small forum, larger forums, people are learning from each other. We're going to get through it. And the goal here is to get through it. You know, worst case, in a way, it's not damaging to your reputation, your brand. But as always, as we've always said, there's an opportunity to even go further and lift yourself up beyond where you could be before. And so hopefully you all in the roles you play are able to work with your internal folks to be able to reach that kind of position, because it's there if you can get there with all the frustrations and challenges that we're all aware of. So appreciate the conversation today. Christian and Ryan, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Chase, as always. Thank you, Chase.
Absolutely enjoyed it.
And thanks to everybody in the chat channel. These are always better when we have participants who contribute, even though we limit. We'd love to have your voices in the mix, but we all know how that goes sometimes. So doing it in the chat channel, asking questions, people get so much more out of it when we're able to have that kind of conversation than just hearing us kind of go on and on. So thanks. And we hope you guys keep coming back. If you have something you want us to cover, throw it in the chat channel right now before you leave, a topic, an issue. If there's somebody you'd like us to try to get on the show, you can also email us at nonormal@thinkrevivehealth.com with suggestions or ideas. Remember that you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Watch for a recording to be posted up on our website at thinkrevivehealth.com/COVID-19 by the end of the day. And as always, good luck out there in the no normal. And we will see you next week.